Thank you, Genu, for being here to discuss what we have been going through. And my presentation is on effects of mid-season forage harvesting on growth and yield performance of grain turf. We call this one a tiny wonder grain, originally from Ethiopia. It's a tropical warm season annual grass that is exceptionally drought tolerant. You can grow it with as low as 17 to 19 inches of rainfall. Very tiny grain, 150 grains of turf is equivalent to 1 grain of wheat in size, and it takes about 3,000 grains of turf in a gram. But it has unique nutritional benefits. It has been compared to egg yolk, white, so we call it a green version of the egg white. It has a crude protein around 14, and this one is amazingly complete in its amino acid profile, and it's even richer in lysine, which is the most limiting amino acid. And you can see it out competes all other cereal grains except rice and oats. And methionine, again, it outnumbers all other cereals. It's also unusually rich in minerals, especially calcium and iron, calcium being the most abundant in body, and iron, with issues of anemia, has made turf credited for good health among the Ethiopian population, living in the rural. Anemia for families with turf as a major proportion of their diet is very low. And there are diversities of products and recipes in which it is prepared, so it's mostly there is something for everybody. And this makes it something that presents economic opportunities to various groups. And it's in the U.S., it's basically an emerging and fast-growing superfood in terms of demand. Economically, to the U.S., like I said, it has a fast and high and fast-growing demand, especially in large metropolitan areas, basically due to a large proportion of Ethiopian immigrants in those areas, and a growing interest among U.S. consumers in healthy eating, and turf happens to be one of those. And it is so because, for one thing, it is gluten-free, and that makes it a healthy alternative to about 2 million people in the U.S. living with celiac disease or other forms of gluten intolerance. And to that effect, the world's leading market research firm in 2011 found that America accounted for more than 50% of the global gluten-free market share, and they projected a rise of 10%, okay, from 4.6 billion in 2015 to around 7.6 billion by 2020. So a big economic opportunity right there. And the USDA report of the Agricultural Service in 2015 predicted that U.S. flour import from Ethiopia, TEF flour, were estimated to reach between 6,000 and 8,000 metric tons by January of this year, and with an upward of 18,000 by the end of the year. So with all those opportunities, then we also have challenges, okay, for making turf a commercial crop in the U.S. And the major challenge is weed competition. when you want to grow it for grain. You have challenges with crabgrass that can make it even, you know, lose the whole crop. And then we have challenges with broadleaves, especially the morning glory, and that can wrap the stems, and you basically lose the crop. Not just weeds, but again, because the stems are very fine, if you get a good yield, then the weight of the seed head is too much for the stems, and with little wind and storm, you have a lot of lodging. If you don't have a good dry sperm, spare following the storm, then it's a loss right there. So basically, weed competition and lodging are major challenges to its agronomic production in the U.S. And the other major problem is the harvesting and threshing of the seeds, especially for small-scale producers. So our study thought of growing turf for two purposes. If you can harvest it, the first growth as forage in July, and then let the regrowth go into seed production, that might suppress the weeds, okay, and leave turf with a growing advantage, and maybe that way you can produce a seed crop without much challenges in wheat. So we just prepared the seed bed and seeded the turf, and then use simple means to just compact the seed bed to improve the seed soil contact, and manage few plots to make them weed free so that we could compare the yields between weed free and weed compromised. And when the crop was at early flowering stage, we just took a few rows and harvested them for forage. It's a good forage crop, and if you want to let it grow into seed production, then it's an alternative purpose. So one set of crops were, rows were left to grow fully to seed production, and one set was cut for forage and then allowed it to regrow, and with aim of comparing the two. So at the flowering stage of the regrowth, then the scoring of seed filling and flowering percentage on both sets was done, and sward heights recorded just to compare. With forage yield, there was no difference between the two varieties, brown and ivory, plots. They all yielded about 4,000 kilograms per hectare. And the cut, half-season harvested, they managed to regrow to good height and even produced seed, just not as much as the full season, plots. But regrowth was there, and it successfully flowered. We still observed lodging problems, especially on the white variety. It looks brown here, but when you thresh, the seeds are white, so it's the opposite of what it looks like. So lodging for the full season crop was still high, and the sward heights were almost half on the half season plots compared to the full season plots. But again, the major focus here was, could we get the regrowth to produce harvestable seed crop? So that happened, and we have just harvested the crops, and what we see from field observation is that you can harvest a teff stand for both forage and seed production by strategically bringing in a half-season harvest for forage and then let the regrowth continue into seed production late in fall. And that a single forage cut at early flowering stage will not compromise your seed yield significantly. The challenge remains here is the timing of the first cut, depending on when you seeded. If the first cut coincides with the dry spell that we experience in summer, then the regrowth may be triggered into seeding before it has a significant vegetative growth, and therefore you will have a poor seed yield. So you want to harvest when you are just getting out of the dry spell in summer, so that your plants are not moisture stressed to switch into seed production before they have had a significant growth. But then now that brings in another challenge of how late should you let them go and be sure of good enough growing degree days and avoid the wetness in fall, rainfall when it comes to harvesting. So those challenges are the ones now, depend on the location. You could start early, okay, if the soils warm, up sooner. But if warming up of the soils is delayed, though you are in that, a critical decision, you would rather delay the first harvesting rather than force the regrowth to coincide with the dry spell. You're going to lose it all. The other thing, for the sake of Virginia, we are hoping to look at the effect of soil iron content. We have red clay in the region, and we are hoping that it may be reflected in the grain quality, that these red soils are comparable to those found in the Ethiopian high mountains, and if that can be reflected in the seed quality, then it will give our region a premium price, but that remains to be seen. So all we have here as a take home is that it is possible to face the wheat challenge by going for dual purpose, production with a half season harvesting and then manage the regrowth for seed yield, but with a good timing of when that exactly happens. We are grateful to the Virginia Cultural Council for funding the study, and thank you for listening.
We have time for one or two questions. Is there any options or any breeding activities that could happen the problem of logging? And is that also possible to use differently those four grains, is only for grains, and is there any development on forage varieties of pest?
So the question was, are there, any ongoing efforts, breeding web for addressing the lodging issues, and whether there were different varieties for foraging? As far as breeding is concerned, yes, we are not, doing that at our station, but I'm aware of, breeding studies going on in other stations. I have a colleague at Nevada, University of Nevada. He's assessing different lines, and whether lodging is question of, maybe the internode length and what, so people may come up with the better ones. And for grain and forage varieties, yes, a difference is there. You can breed for greater biomass, but it can be less, in seed yield. So Yeah, there are differences in the varieties. If you go for one that has been developed mostly for forage, you will have, poor. So you want to go for the grain one because it can still be used for forage.
Let's thank Dr. Timu in the interest of time. Thank you.